The field turns for home.
They're at the top of the stretch.
Top of the stretch.
They're into the stretch.
And here they come into the final furlong.
Final furlong.
Into the final furlong.
They go inside the final furlong.
This is the final furlong on HRRN Live.
HRRN Live.
It's Trainer Talk Wednesday. Now, here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Oh, good afternoon once again, everyone, and welcome to this Trainer Talk edition of the Final Furlong Show here on HRRN, our typical Wednesday night feature from 6 to 7 Eastern Time. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, the Pontiff of the Pick Four, and we do want to welcome everybody just joining us across this great nation of ours on Sirius Channel 93. If you've been with us for the past 3 hours with our live racing coverage from Belmont Park on XM 209, welcome back to the program, and of course, a special welcome to everybody listening on Sirius XM Internet Smartphone Channel 961. And JT, these shows always a lot of fun, and a couple of brand new trainers tonight. Linda Rice is going to be here for the first half of the show, and then we're going to turn our attention to the Aussie Adam Kitchingman for the second half. Should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, really looking forward to this show. Two trainers that always do well at meets they attend, and of course Linda Rice, one of the great stories, being the first woman to be the leading trainer at Saratoga.
Yeah, spectacular feat. She did that in 2009. She has trained 1,141 career winners. Her runners have earned more than $38 million in purse earnings, and she is nice enough to spend a little time with us here on Trainer Talk tonight. Linda, thanks so much for being here with us.
Hello, Michael. Hello, Jude. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, happy to have you on the program and looking forward to hearing your story. I talk about those unbelievable numbers, more than 1,100 career winners, $38 million in purse earnings. You should be very, very proud. Tremendous.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pretty fun ride. You know, lots of trials and tribulations, but lots of victories and a lot of good times.
Now, I do have to ask, you're a native of Wisconsin. Could you still be considered a cheesehead?
Depends on who you ask. yes. I am a native of Wisconsin, but I grew up in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
Now, I know that racing was in your pedigree, obviously going back a couple of generations. Talk about that, and talk about how a girl growing up in Wisconsin gets hooked on the sport of racing.
Well, it's interesting story. My father, my family's obviously from central Wisconsin, and I have a lot of relatives still there now. But my father grew up with Wayne Lucas. They went to school together since they were fifth graders, I believe. And they went to high school together and college together. And they both worked with horses together and broke and trained horses as kids, basically to supplement their income. And eventually, they both became school teachers in central Wisconsin. My father was a science teacher and a wrestling coach, and Wayne was a basketball coach and a phys ed teacher. And eventually, my father and Wayne retired from teaching and started racing horses full time. My father ended up moving to Pennsylvania, and Wayne went west to New Mexico and started racing quarter horses. So, and I actually have a brother named Wayne, after Mr. Lucas. So,
wow.
So that's how our family got its start in racing.
Wow. Do you still cheer for Wayne as well when you see him winning all these big races?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I feel like he's really a part of the family, and it's a thrill to watch him after, you know, he's been a hero to horse racing for so many years, and even at this stage of the game to win the big races, the Preakness. It's really exciting to see. I'm happy for him.
Does he ever hit you up with that line and say, hey, I remember you when you were just running around in diapers?
No, he doesn't. But I do remember after I won the Saratoga training title, he gave me a big hug and he said, listen, I just want to tell you one thing. He said, it's hard to get there. It's even harder to stay there.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's kind of the same thing that Alan Jerkins says on the little video that you have on your website. It becomes addicting to be the leading trainer, and it's something that, you know, once you do it, you want to do it again. I guess it's like winning the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously, all trainers have aspirations of winning the Derby, the Belmont, the Breeders' Cup. And, you know, for me, you know, to win the Saratoga title was probably the, you know, my best moment in racing. Since then, I've been able to win two titles at Aqueduct and tied with Todd Pletcher at the Belmont meet for one title. And another tie at Aqueduct. So, but I don't think any of them will ever compare to the first, and of course, probably the best being Saratoga. So,
Linda, who were the individuals that were most inspirational to you as you were growing up and looking at getting involved in the sport?
Well, of course, my father, who was a longtime horseman, and he's kind of a horse whisperer, as one might say. He's been the most inspirational to me. And he was very good with young horses and did a lot of the buying, purchasing of young horses for Wayne when Wayne was at Belmont and winning, you know, most of his, a lot of his big races, let's
sure.
say Life's Magic, Family Style, you know, winning championships and stuff. So my father was involved with Wayne his entire life, did a lot of buying for him. And as a young girl, I followed my father to Keeneland every year and shopped horse auctions. And, of course, once you've done that for a while, it just gets in your blood and it never goes away. So, you know, I love to go to the auctions, whether it be yearling auctions, two-year-old training, weanling auctions. It's really fun.
Do you take your dad along now and ask for his advice, or you do everything on your own?
No, my father's he's retired now. His health has not been great. My parents had always come to Saratoga and spent a couple weeks with me every year. You know, they used to spend the whole meet with me and give us a little family time. But my dad's health isn't that good any longer, and so he watches HRTV, TVG, watches from afar.
And if I'm not mistaken, you spent a couple of years as a Nittany Lion, too, didn't you?
Oh, yes. I was a Nittany Lion at Penn State. And so I'll have sometimes some of the fans will send me Nittany Lion Penn State sweatshirts and things, which is always fun. I always get a kick out of it, you know. And that's always a thrill for me. So they bring me, you know, sweatshirts, hats, T-shirts at the races and things. So I'm thinking, God, anything you put in print will never go away.
But even when you were at Penn State, you were still actively involved with helping your dad and your family with the operation, weren't you?
Yes, I was. Unfortunately, I spent more time racing and training and breaking horses than I did at college. I was constantly on my way home for the weekends and working with the horses, and I couldn't get it out of my system. And I eventually went back to training.
Did you go to school for, was it an equine program, or was it something completely unrelated to the business?
Well, it was computer science.
That's unrelated.
And the good news is I've been able to use that in my business and help me pretty well at this point.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that I always tell people when they ask advice about being a trainer. I say you got to pay attention to the business end, and that's something that you excel at, and maybe that's why.
Yeah, I mean, it did help me a lot. I mean, obviously, it wasn't where my passion was. My passion is with the horses and always has been. But, you know, I run an office here at Belmont, and I've got two full-time secretaries, and it's very computerized, and I'd like to bring all that technology into the racing world, and it certainly helped me a lot and allowed me to do the things that I've been able to do.
Your website's very impressive. I mean, we see a lot of trainers' websites doing what we do, and I think yours really stands out.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's a work in progress.
Well, they all are, but you've got a lot of information on there and a lot of good stuff, and it's very, very interactive. I like it.
Linda Rice, our special guest on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Linda, you mentioned your dad and your brother Wayne, but your entire family very much active in the sport and have been for a long time. I know your brother Kent, if I'm not mistaken, was a leading apprentice jockey back in the late 1970s, right?
Well, I have three older brothers. I'm the youngest of four. And my brother's Kurt Rice. He okay. was actually the leading apprentice in the United States at the age of 16. And he rode races for my father, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Philadelphia Park. I think he won 311 races as a 16-year-old apprentice. Of course, Mr. Lucas tried to get my parents to send him to New York, and they decided that he needed to finish high school, and they weren't having that. So, but my family, my three brothers, they moved to Ocala, Florida. When I went off to be a Nittany Lion, I think the family packed everything up out of Pennsylvania and moved to Ocala, Florida. So they live there. They operate training centers in Florida. My brother Brian and his wife Holly have Woodside Ranch. My parents are retired, but they have Indian Prairie Ranch. My brother Wayne is there as well. And my brother Kurt also. He's managed one of the farms there for quite a while. So they all live in Ocala, Florida, which, you know, is nice because I can see them all at one time.
Yeah, the family parties whenever there's a sale, huh?
Yeah, family parties whenever there's a sale. But I never get home for the 4th of July trip to the lake. We're always racing too many horses then.
So when did you make the decision to go out on your own and begin training horses?
Well, when I left, being the youngest and my brothers had careers of their own, I had been more or less running my father's barn, his stable, at the age of 17, 18. When I left college, I started training on my own. I think it was 23. I got married, and I started training on my own. And then I moved to New York in 1992, and I've been here ever since, making a way.
Who was your first winner?
A horse named Contrabass at Garden State. I was actually the first horse I ran as a trainer, and it was my first win.
Oh, that's fantastic. You know, it's really funny, and you may be amazed by this because I am. We have a lot of trainers on, and they can't remember who their first winner was. And I just can't imagine not knowing that.
Yeah. Well, mine, it's easy because it was my first horse that I raced as a trainer with my own license, and my father owned the horse. And ironically, my 1,000th win came at Belmont Park with my father's horse as well.
Oh, wow.
And
that's
so that was pretty neat. And it actually was the win that tied me for the Belmont training title with Todd Fletcher. So it was on closing day. It was the second last race of the meet, and it was my dad's horse. So
wow,
that was
tremendous. Yeah. And you mentioned that name, Todd Fletcher. Obviously, he's had so much success in this game and always tough to get by in terms of the leading trainer title at any race meet. But, Linda, talk about that. Talk about going up against, in pretty much a male-dominated sport, you're going up against some of the biggest names in the game each and every day, and then to beat them at their own game and win the training title at a race meet like Historic Saratoga. Talk about that and everything that you've had to go overcome from that perspective.
Well, when I first moved to New York in 92, you know, it was kind of an uphill battle for, good 10 years. And I was one of the very few women in New York. And I think, actually, I see a trend, a change, where there's more women trainers in New York that are getting along okay at this point. I'd like to think that winning training titles in New York has helped that, open that door for more to be successful here. And as I said, when I first came, I think a lot of the men, I was kind of a rarity, and they thought I was probably going to come and go pretty quickly. And but over time, now the guys treat me great. Chris Clement, Jerkins, everyone. I've been here long enough and have had enough success that they don't question my abilities any longer. And so really, they're super to me. But as far as, you know, being a woman, I mean, frankly, you know, I put fillies in filly races. I oftentimes put fillies in colt races, too. But, you know, it's there's no sex as far as entering. You know, I still have to beat Billy Mott and Todd Fletcher and Alan Jerkins. And I, you know, do it as much as I can. But they're very, you know, it's a very good group of trainers up here. And so it's a challenge every day.
Well, I think there's got to be a lot of times they open the form and they look and don't want to race against your horse. I mean,
well, I'd like to think so at this point. And if they're not, maybe I haven't done a very good job of entering.
Linda, do you have other girls that will come up to you, younger girls that want to get involved in the sport? Will they come up to you from time to time and ask you how you did it and for some advice?
Oh yeah, I have a lot of them. I have they email me, they send me letters, and it's very flattering, you know. They call me from colleges and write papers, and a lot of young women that do that. And one of the most enjoyable things that I get is through the, I'm on the Horsemen's Board in New York, which I have been for 10 years now. And the Horsemen's Board donates money to a lot of the thoroughbred retirement foundations. And I get a real thrill out of the young girls that are riding these retired thoroughbreds as well, you know, and horses that I've raced and stuff. And, you know, you can see that they're just very passionate about it. It reminds me of myself when I was, you know, 9, 10, 11. So.
That's great. Have you ever met Kathy Walsh?
No, I haven't.
Do you know who she is? You know,
yes,
she.
I do.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
You and her have
name.
Very similar stories because her father was a trainer for many years, and yeah. She was one of the first women to be a leading trainer at Long Acres, and she was leading trainer at Canterbury, pretty much everywhere she raced. But you guys have a very parallel career, although, you know, decades apart.
Right.
Linda, what advice do you give to a girl that approaches you and says, hey, I really look up to you. I admire what you've done. I want to get involved in the sport. What advice do you give to them?
Well, obviously, I mean, they have to have a real background in horses. You know, the younger you start, the better they are. And a lot of hard work and, you know, surround themselves by people that know what they're doing. You know, the old saying, put your horses against the worst company possible and yourself in the best company. And I think that's very true. So I just encourage them to work hard and they have to be very dedicated, obviously, but that it can certainly be done. You know, it's not without out of their realm. So.
Talk about your team a little bit. I know you've got some really long-standing employees, and that's a tribute to your operation.
Yes, I do. I have, I usually keep two barns going. My base is at Belmont Park. My office is adjacent to my barn at Belmont Park. I've been in the same barn since 1995. I keep 40 horses here. My second division usually floats from Miami racing at Gulfstream in the winter to Saratoga, where I keep a barn up there of, you know, mostly two-year-olds or post-surgical horses coming off of layoffs, preparing to race. And my assistant, Samantha Rendazzo, stays in the Saratoga, Miami division. And then myself and Josie Palmasano, my assistant at Belmont, stay here in New York. My office, I have a weekend secretary, another girl during the week, and a couple foremen. So it's, you know, most of the people have been with me, Samantha 20 years, Josie 10 years. So a lot of my staff has been with me a long time, and of course, even the grooms and hot walkers are families that have worked for me for 10, 15 years as well. So there's a lot of continuity there, and I think that's important.
Linda Rice, our special guest on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Linda, were there certain trainers that you looked up to as you were growing up and thinking about getting in the business and maybe even in the early days of being a trainer?
Well, I remember I was stabled at Monmouth for 2 years prior to moving to New York, and I remember seeing Scotty Schulhofer's horses race at Monmouth, and I was in the paddock, and I was just so impressed with the Centennial Farm silks, and the horses that they shipped down there to run were magnificent. And I followed Scotty for quite a while, Alan Jerkins, of course, Wayne Lucas, I would say that those were the ones that I aspired to when I first arrived in New York. Mac Miller, I was quite impressed with him when I first arrived in New York. I had run a grass horse named Double Booked against Solar Splendor at Saratoga, and I think we beat him in one of the best finishes of that year in a four-way finish with Jolie's Halo, Solar Splendor. I remember there were about four with a horse named Double Booked, but I was very impressed with their operations and things, and they were probably my inspiration.
And, of course, you're very, very good with your young horses. That's one of your fortes, is that you're excellent at bringing young two-year-olds up to their first start. Talk about that and some of the things that influenced you there with working with young horses.
Well, I think that my success with young horses had started out with my father's background. He and Wayne broke and trained young horses since they were kids, And of course, they perfected it over the years. And my dad was a true horseman. You know, he was not the horse trainer of this century, where, you know, this decade, where, you know, computers and rags and sheets and thoroughgraph numbers. That was not my father. My father was a true horseman, and I learned a lot of the breaking training, the psychology of the young mind. You know, the creatures of habit. You know, there are different things that show signs of discomfort, pain, things of that nature, from my father. So I think that's where my background with the young horses came. My father bought yearlings, Mongo Queen, Tilt-a-Lading, Family Style. These were horses that I broke as a young girl with my father, you know, being 15, 16, 17, 18 years old. So that was really my background. Coming to the races and learning to do the rest of it came later on, after I was on my own. So.
And obviously the young horses and all those winners you sent out in 2009 at Saratoga helped you achieve that goal of becoming the first female trainer ever to win the title there. But you had a stretch in 2007 that I want you to talk about for just a minute. You sent out six straight winners at the 2007 Saratoga meet. That's just unbelievable.
Yeah, that was unique. It was kind of it was fun. And, of course, all streaks come to an end, you know, but it was good while it lasted. I've had a lot of special moments at Saratoga. That was unique in 2007. I think in 2008, I ran four horses in one stakes race up there, and they were finished first, second, third, and fourth, which was another unique phenomenon at Saratoga, which they refer to as the Linda Rice Superfecta now. So I've had some special moments up there, but and I think that probably my first grade one win at Saratoga was in the Spinaway, and then, of course, winning the Hopeful with City Zip, which was a dead heat at Saratoga. That was, of course, unique as well. I think it had been, other than the Traverse this last year, that was the last dead heat in a grade one, or maybe dead heat at Saratoga in a stakes race, since City Zip dead heated with Yana Guska in the Hopeful.
You know, I'm curious, when you get on a streak like that. Now, I was a baseball player all the way through college, and when I would get on a hot streak, I'd be hitting the ball well or whatever it might be, I would do everything exactly the same before each game. Now, I'm a bit of a wacko with all my superstitions and everything, but when you're on a streak like that, you're winning six consecutive races, you're in the hunt for the leading trainer title at Saratoga, do you do some things like that? Do you have any superstitions, I guess?
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, if I buy a new outfit and I can't win a race in that outfit, that one gets retired. You know,
yes.
We don't use that any longer. Of course, we all have superstitions like that. Yeah. But, you know, at Saratoga, it's so busy racing 6 days a week with a lot of clients in town and everything that you don't really get a chance to be nervous about it at all. You're just going from point A to point B to point C, and there's no time to worry. There's no time to fret, and you just, you know, try to make sure that you don't let anything fall through the cracks and make sure you get the best results possible with what you have. And so, you know, that's always been the main issue. As far as other superstitions, you know, I always have a running joke with my father that when things are going well, we run, you know, sometimes everything you do just turns out right. And just keep moving forward and keep throwing the ball. But every once in a while, you'll get in a period where things just nothing goes right. And on occasion, I'll tell my father that we're under lockdown. And what that means is things are not going right. We're going to quit entering. We're going to take a step back and wait until things are good again. In other words, obviously the horses just are not in the right zone. They're all slightly, they're just not in the, we're not in the right space. And so then I quit entering and don't get aggressive. But when things are going well, we can get very aggressive. I've, you know, won races where you run them back in 5 days and win, and when you're in the zone, you're in the zone.
What do you do to maintain your sanity the rest of the time when you're not training horses?
Well, you know, I have a few hobbies. I you know, I'm kind of a jogger. I like to I'm a runner. That's one thing. And I love movies too. Let's see. I also do to maintain my sanity. Those are probably the two things. I mean, 7 days a week, there's usually not a lot of downtime.
Right. Well, you run to the movie theater.
Yes, exactly. I run to the movie theater. But those are probably the things. And the other thing I enjoy is I have house in Long Island in a condo in Saratoga, and I'm a bit of a I enjoy working on the house and things like that, apartment.
Maybe we'll crash at your condo in Saratoga when we come up.
Yes, exactly.
we'll have some fun. All right, Linda, just about a minute and a half left before we have to let you go. Hard to believe this interview has really flown by, really been enjoyable. But you've had so much success for much of your career. Are there one or two things on your bucket list that you say, okay, these are my upcoming goals, these are some things I really want to accomplish?
Yes. I mean, obviously, you know, I'd like to run in the Triple Crown, win the Kentucky Derby, like many other people. You know, some of those are the Traverse and the Derby are probably the two races that mean the most to me. And I know that there's a very good chance that'll never happen. But as long as I continue to make my business something that I enjoy, and I try to eliminate the things that I don't enjoy and make it a better working environment for my staff, for myself, I'm kind of a builder, a little bit like my brothers, my father. We're constantly building something new, whether it be a new barn with a better watering system, a better racetrack, and I'm kind of a builder, and I like to build a better business. And whether I bring new technology in, better horses, better program for my employees, whether it be healthcare, this and that, retirement foundations, education, anything that I can offer to create a better business. And hopefully one day that will take me to the Traverse, to the Derby. But if it doesn't, that's okay too. You know.
Linda Rice, ladies and gentlemen. Linda, so much fun hearing your story. We do have to get to our break. Adam Kitchingman coming up next, but thank you so much for spending some time with us here today.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Jude.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was great. Very enjoyable.
All right, we're going to get to the second half of Trainer Talk. Adam Kitchingman up next on HRN. I'm here with Dr. Jim Chiappetta from Flair Equine Nasal Strips. One of the hot-button topics that's out there now is EIPH. Talk to me about that.
Mike, EIPH is an acronym for exercise-induced pulmonary hemorrhage, or what is commonly referred to as bleeding. When exercising at high intensity, some of these horses can hemorrhage a little bit into their lungs. Flair strips have been shown to reduce that bleeding and keep these horses healthy and their lungs healthy during performance.
To learn more about keeping your horse healthy, visit flairstrips.com. That's flairstrips.com.
Attention horsemen, are you getting the most out of your equine athlete? All natural EPO equine could be the answer. EPO equine is the most potent blood builder on the market. Top trainers like Scott Lake and Steve Margolis are reporting dramatic improvements in their horses. Easy to use and clinically tested, EPO equine is the product your horses need for speed, strength, and stamina right out of the gate. Call 215-501-6880 or visit epoequine.com.
RaceHorseReport.com.
What is it?
What is it?
What is it?
What is it, baby?
International racing, weekend stakes recaps, always free selections, great stories, workout information, racing news, handicapping tips, spot plays, and more.
It's as marvelous and as simple as that.
Join thousands of other thoroughbred racing fans by going to RaceHorseReport.com. Make RaceHorseReport.com your number one source for thoroughbred racing information.
That's great.
RaceHorseReport.com.
This is Daily Racing Form's Dan Ullman with some big news about DRF bets. Thousands of players like you have already made the switch to DRF bets, and now there's an even bigger reason for you to join. Free DRF PPs. That's right. For the first time ever, get free Daily Racing Form PPs when you wager with DRF bets. These are the DRF past performances you know and love, and DRF bets is the only place you can get them free. So why wager anywhere else? With DRF bets, you'll get the best sign-up bonus in the business, free guides and analysis from DRF's top handicappers, breaking news, analysis, and wagering on the go with DRF and DRF Bets Mobile, one-click multi-ticket wagers with DRF Ticketmaker, and now free Daily Racing Form PPs. Only one place gives you the PPs you prefer when you wager, DRF Bets. Join today and wager with the most trusted name in racing. And if you sign up right now, you'll get a $125 cash bonus. Find out more at drf.com/bets. That's drf.com/bets.
The road to the Triple Crown has come to an end. But the racing is just beginning to heat up this summer on HRRN. We'll bring you racing's biggest events from Arlington, Belmont, and Saratoga all summer long. And don't miss our coverage of the Grade 1 Stephen Foster Handicap, June 15th, live from Churchill Downs. Go to horseracingradio.net for a complete schedule of races and affiliates. It's live racing all summer long, only on HRRN. It's Trainer Talk Wednesday on the Final Furlong on HRRN Live.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld, our producer Lee Della Pina in our Lexington, Kentucky studio. A really fun visit with Linda Rice in the first half of the program. And looking forward to our second half as well with trainer Adam Kitchingman. We'll talk to him in just a moment, but want to remind everyone that if you missed any portion of this show, that interview with Linda in the first half of the program, or if you're going to be unable to catch this full interview with Adam in the second half, you can visit our website later on tonight and check out a podcast at horseracingradio.net. And of course, all of our guests who appear live on Trainer Talk receive a gift courtesy of Flair Equine Nasal Strips and EPO Equine. So keep that in mind as well.
Yeah, that's a nice gift for a trainer.
Well, you know, Adam Kitchingman has conditioned 225 winners for his career. They have lifetime earnings of more than $5 million. He's a native of Australia, and he's nice enough to be with us here tonight on Trainer Talk. And Adam, I can just tell you, you've come a long way since rocking the ship, my friend.
Yes, thank you very much.
Rocking the ship, of course, your very first winner of your career, and you've really been on a roll ever since.
Oh, thank you very much. It's been a lot of fun, and the passion doesn't seem like it's work.
Where's that thick Australian accent?
I grew up about 2 hours out of Melbourne, Victoria, kind of in the bush, a small country town of about 2,000 people. So, yeah, it's kind of came a long way from a small country town to living in L.A.
Culture shock.
Yeah. How long have you been in the United States now?
About 15 years now.
That's what I thought. I thought it was about 15 years. Yeah.
Now, Adam, if I'm not mistaken, horse racing in Australia is almost like a national sport, isn't it?
It definitely is. The Melbourne Cup is actually a national holiday. So to have a racing event that's a holiday just shows you how much they love horse racing.
Were you a big Farlap fan growing up over there?
Oh, for sure. Every time I go back to Melbourne, I go to the museum and I say hi to the old horse.
Yeah, they have a skeleton there, right? Is that
the poor horse is spread all over the place. His skeleton, I believe, is in Sydney. His they stuffed his body. It's in Melbourne, and I believe his heart and lungs are in New Zealand.
Wow, you're right. Oh, yeah, he's everywhere you want to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you seen the movie Adam Farlap? The movie?
Yeah, I think it's one of the best race movies, even to this day, I think it's a fantastic movie. Anyone that's into horse racing, you've got to watch the movie. I think it's a really good story, and it's well put together.
Yeah, watch it until the end and then turn away. I don't want to give it away. But
when you were growing up, what made you horse crazy?
Well, my family is not into the horse racing industry. I just grew up with horses. Grew up, you know, show jumping and going to the country fairs, and I really loved cross country and riding and stuff like that. So it wasn't until I was like 18, 19, and I was an apprentice to be an electrician, and that kind of fell through. And a local trainer asked me if I was interested in getting on some horses, and kind of was just a natural as far as, you know, riding the race horses. One thing led to another.
Didn't you win a big race as a young guy?
Yeah. Those who have watched the movie, The Man from Snowy River, it's a classic Australian movie. And there was a part in the movie where they go down this hill and go over a log and stuff. And I'm probably underplaying it. It was pretty tetric. It was a tough race. anyway, after they filmed the movie, all the stunt riders got together and created a race called the Great Mountain Race. And it was about 3 miles up and down hills over about 4-5 foot, you know, log jumps, old log jumps through a river. And I was the youngest person to win it. I think they've canceled the race now. It just got too dangerous. Too many people and horses were getting hurt.
Wow. Adam Kitchingman, our special guest here on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Adam, you mentioned your parents and your family not really into horse racing, and it must have been difficult for you to kind of get involved without having that family background like so many other trainers who are in the sport, you know, they do have.
Probably, you know, it's been the hardest thing is, you know, trying to establish myself without really knowing too much from my family, I guess. But I've worked for some top trainers in Australia that really took me under their wing and showed me a lot, and had a lot of support, especially from my wife and family. Her family has been very supportive. So, you know, I honestly, I've been blessed. I got to live in Japan for a year and a half. I managed a farm over there, and you know, got to travel the world doing this job. So, you know, it has been hard, but you know, I feel blessed in the same thing.
Talk about that experience in Japan and what it's like, you know, with a totally different language and really different training methods and stuff, adapting to that situation.
The toughest thing I had was the weather. I came from like the Florida temperature of Australia, and I moved straight into the winter in Japan, and I've never had that type of cold weather before. You know, 6 months of Indian snow. So that was probably the biggest shock. The Japanese people, as long as you show them respect, they're great to deal with. You know, they spend a lot of money on their horses. Their training facilities, you know, they blow anything away that's over here. They had a mile straight indoor training center. Mile and a half covered, training centers. You know, 3 mile turf course. It was just straight up a hill, and the quarter pole markers were with trees, and it was an amazing experience.
Almost like a golf course, huh?
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't think it would be like that. You always think of Japan being heavily commercialized, but the countryside in Hokkaido, it was very, very nice.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Adam, how much different the industry is and the sport is in Japan and even in Australia than what we see here in the United States. Is it vastly different?
Well, the biggest difference is probably the money. The Japanese just love horse racing. I believe it's the only legal form of gambling in Japan is horse racing. They do have other forms, which are kind of weird, but as far as I know, it's the only legal form of gambling. So you get a huge crowd of people going to the races, and they really get behind it.
It's like a national pastime over there as well. They really love their game. I know some of the jocks have been compared to like Michael Jordan type personalities, and they can't go anywhere. I know Yutaka Take, he can't go anywhere on the street. He used to like to come to Del Mar because nobody knew who he was.
Yeah, I mean, I wish it was a little more like that over here. I mean, they definitely idolize them over there.
Yeah. What was your how did you make your decision to come to the U.S.?
It was every 6 months you have to leave Japan to get your visa extended, and I saw a cheap flight from Tokyo LA returns for I think it was around about $250. So I said to a couple of my friends, hey, do you want to go to L.A. to get our visa extended? And they said, sure. So we hopped on a plane. We didn't know a single soul over here. And we just happened to get to L.A. It was opening night at Hollywood Park. It was Friday night. And went to the races and met up with Brian Lynch. Anyone knows Brian? He's a fun guy to hang out with. So we had a few drinks, and Brian kind of said, well, why don't you make it a working holiday? So we started riding a few horses here, and I ended up falling in love with a girl and ended up staying.
Yeah, and that was a bittersweet romance for you, fantastic girl, and who left us way too early.
Yes, she did. She was an amazing person, a very, very, very good, sweet person that passed away from breast cancer way too young.
And later on, you were able to train a horse that was named after her that turned out to be quite a nice filly.
Yes, Vicky Zona. She was all heart, that filly. She wasn't a big filly, but she was all heart. It was always nice to, when you name a horse after somebody that you love dearly. Not always does it turn out, but you know, this filly did turn out, and it was very nice.
And Adam, I guess you said it was 1998 when you first came to the States and then had that experience. Who were some of the people that you first started working with before you branched out on your own?
When I first came over here, like I said, Brian Lynch kind of helped us get started, so I had a lot of thanks to him. Then I started working for Charlie Wittenham when Tim Yuck team was his assistant, and Tim's just a great guy, and just galloping horses with for Charlie, and then I think Tim went over to Baffert. I worked for Baffert, just galloping to him, and you know, just drifted along to a few other trainers, just galloping and exercising horses, but I'd always wanted to train and go on my own. And I probably wasn't the best assistant because I always had a mind of my own and wanted to do things my way. So I think I ended up working for Eric Kruljack as a kind of assistant for his Southern California string. And he just left me alone and I did my thing. We had a good run for a while. And then I think I went and bought my own horse and while I was still working for Eric, and he kind of supported me and backed me quite a bit.
Are there things you took from each of those trainers when you were working with them that you still employ in your operation today?
Oh, for sure. I think if you work for a variety of people, you kind of get to open your eyes and see not only what's good, but also what's bad and what the biggest difference is. And as far as I've come up, you know, the biggest difference is just the details. I mean, it's all the little details. The good trainers, they pick up on all the little things. And the bad trainers just, you know, don't seem to notice them as much. I don't think there's definitely no special medication out there you can just give a horse and think it's going to run. It's all the little things that you do that helps them, that makes a difference.
Do you think that the fact that you got on so many horses and that you're basically a horseman at heart is an edge over other trainers who, you know, maybe don't have that experience?
For sure. I think this industry is more political. There's a lot of salesmen out there, and they seem to be the ones that have the big barns, and they employ people, you know, that are horsemen to kind of take care of it. You know, if you can eliminate having to ask somebody a question, if you could hop on the horse yourself and could feel, hey, this horse is, you know, all here, you know, we can give it some more time, it's going to be okay, or, you know, that's just the way that horse moves, so we can just go on with it, just as long as it maintains the same way and is happy, you know, you can get away with a few things. But I think whenever you can eliminate, you know, having to question somebody else and you can test, you know, you feel it for yourself, that's got to be an advantage.
When you were working with Charlie and with Bob, did they put you on some of their better horses, or did they start you off on a lower level?
I think every one of Bob's horses were good. I don't know if he has a bad one in his barn. You know, Bob is great. I mean, he's got a great program and, you know, takes good care of all of his horses. You know, I only got him to Charlie at the later part of his career, so I didn't get to many of the good horses that he had, but it was just great to be around him and just listen to the stories that he had, that he could tell.
Who was your most memorable Baffert horse that you ever had to gallop?
El Corridor. I was galloping that horse, and I bet a lot of money when he first ran at Del Mar, and he stumbled coming out of the gates, and I think he ran fourth, and then he went on to win quite a few races.
Yeah, those are tough beats when you know one can run, and they disappoint you, but. Talk about that a little bit about the gambling aspect of racing, and you know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, do trainers bet? Or they say, oh, this guy's a betting trainer. This guy's, you know, trying to cash a ticket. I could tell some unbelievable stories that people used to say about me. But but talk about the gambling aspect and how trainers integrate that into their operations.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely trainers that are better at, I wouldn't say setting up a gamble, but just knowing when a horse is going to fire and when a horse is not going to fire. And a lot of the people out there that don't follow horse racing, you have to understand, trainers are only training one horse out of the field. So, you know, our horse might be training great, but, you know, someone else's horse could be training, you know, just as good. So, and a lot of people go, well, what do you think, you know, is your horse going to win today? And I always respond, well, my horse is training great, and, you know, if he runs his race, you should win. But you have to understand, we're not training the whole field. And even if we were training the whole field, we'd probably get it wrong. I mean, if it was that simple, I'd rather just sit up for the races, have lunch, and gamble on horses than having to wake up at 5 o'clock every day to, you know, train these animals. It's definitely not an easy aspect trying to catch a gamble.
Well, you hear a lot of, you know, horse players in front of the televisions and stuff, and they're talking, oh, this guy's a crook, and this guy, you know, sure cashed a big ticket today and all that. And you sometimes you kind of laugh because, you know, they think that you're setting the horse up for a gamble, but it's been my experience that a lot of times the best gambles find you. Like if you have a horse that was in trouble or something that you know about that nobody else knows about, and you look up on the board and he's 15-1 and he really should only be like 3 or 4-1 because he should have beaten the favorite the last time he ran against one another. That's when the best gambles come about, not when you're trying to pull some skullduggery behind the scenes.
Exactly. I mean, I've had some bets and it paid off, you know, quite nicely, but, you know, there's nothing. I didn't really set the horse up. It was just I looked up and my horse was, you know, 15-1. I'm like, this horse has a really good chance today. I don't know why they're not liking this horse. And I'll tell my owners, hey, I remember getting fired one time by a client because he called me up in the morning and said, oh, what do you think of your horse today? And I was having his first try on the grass. And I said, you know, I don't know. I said, this is, you know, just we're experimenting. So I go to the races and I look at all the horses. I visually, you know, handicap by looking at horses more so than reading the racing form. And I looked at all the other horses and I'm like, man, my horse just stands out and I'm 20-1. So I went and put a couple of $100 across the board on it, didn't think much of it. And then I went up to see my client. I thought, oh, yeah, I won today. And he got all mad at me to the point where he fired me because I told him in the morning that, you know, I didn't think my horse was going to win. I couldn't win either way.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah,
sometimes it's best off just keeping your mouth shut.
That happens. Yeah, one day I was sitting next to Charlie Whittingham at Sandita, and he's got a first-time starter in with Sandy Hawley on it, and he says to me, Jude, will you bet me 200 across on my filly? And I said, sure. So I go up, and it was the number one filly. I wish I could remember her name, but she turned out to be a stakes filly. And she was 20 or 25-1. So I bring him back his ticket. The filly wins. And I said to him after the race, Charlie, did you really like that filly? He said, no, but I bet out of respect for the trainer.
Talking with Adam Kitchingman here on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Now, Jude, didn't you tell me that Adam has a nickname that kind of coincides with success?
Yeah, I've heard a few people call him Kaching Man. That's not a bad name to have. You've been on a tremendous roll lately. Talk about that. Talk about your fantastic hot streak.
You know, it has been a great year this year. Actually, the last, you know, 3 months of last year was really good. I don't really know what to say. I've actually been really blessed. I've got some really good horses. My staff has been with me forever. Half the people have worked for me for like 10 years since I got started. So it's been good to, you know, have them along and really enjoyed, you know, celebrating with them.
Adam, you don't
yeah,
have.
Yeah, we work really hard. We've, you know, got good clients and we've placed their horses in the right spot. You know, I've gone through my heartache and ups and downs like everyone in this business goes through, and I think this is just a time where there's more ups and there's downs.
Yeah, and you don't have a big stable, right? How many horses do you have in training now?
I've got about 19 in training, so I've got good clients that let me place them where they belong, and we've been claiming a lot more horses of late, and it seems like more owners don't have the patience to deal with young horses because of the problems and how long it takes them to get to the races. So I've kind of been pushed more to claiming horses, and maybe that has a reason why we're winning at such a high percentage right now.
You have a very talented horse that ran on Belmont Day. Why don't you talk about him?
Love and Shine, yeah. He very, very unlucky, I thought. Just got into a huge speed duel and lost the last few strides. So I was disappointed or heartbroken after the race because I really did really like that horse. And having a small barn and I don't have a lot of money behind me to have a horse like that, you don't get too many chances. So, he ran his eyeballs out, had a real good speed duel. And like I said, the last few strides, he just got too tired and the closers just picked us off. But I'm looking forward to maybe running in the King's Bishop later in the year, and hopefully we can get lucky there.
Well, he's a brilliantly fast horse and just got oodles of talent. I don't think you should hang your head. I think he ran a tremendous race. He was super game.
Yeah, he didn't stop. I mean, he got headed at the top of the stretch. He put that horse away, and I mean, if you watch the race, he really dug in hard, and he had every reason to back up out of there, and he's still stuck in there, and he got beat, half a length a second, and, lengthened a bit to the whole thing. So, and it was only the last, 16th of a mile that they got past us. So, he is an amazing horse. So hopefully, he came out of the race fine, and if everything goes good, we're looking forward to Saratoga with him.
Hey, Adam, you mentioned just that the 19 horses in training, certainly not the stable of a Baffert or a Todd Pletcher or somebody on that level. But is that by design? Do you like to have a smaller, more compact stable, or would you welcome more horses?
Oh, for sure. I'd love to be the Baffert of Southern California. I don't know why I haven't got more horses. I know the industry has just been tough. Definitely has taken a hit over the last few years. I'm not a big salesman. I pretty much like to keep to my horses and train race horses. I'm not really one to go out and sell myself. That's probably why I don't have more horses. And, we're not spending a lot of money on a lot of these horses. Let 'em Shine was only a $9,500 yearling purchase. A lot of people see the $100,000 purchase on the horse, but that was kind of an in-house deal. But we bought the horse for $9,500. So, we don't have a lot of money to spend, but, we're definitely, holding our head high for being in Southern California to compete against the Bafferts and the Saddlers who spend a lot of money on horses.
You got to get yourself a crowbar and get my brother Mark to open his wallet a little bit. I know he's got a couple horses with you, and he always is happy to have them there. He likes the way you work, so... Maybe I'll have to work on them a little bit for you. I'm not much of a salesman either.
Yeah, I wish there was more clients like Mark in the industry. Your brother is just he's a lot of fun. He understands the industry, and he loves doing his claiming. That's his thing. Definitely would like to see him get a really nice baby and have a lot of fun and be on the Triple Crown road and win those big races. I think that's what all trainers want to strive for. And I definitely want to strive to be in those big races. So just a matter of time and we'll get a big client. Bill Peoples has been great to me. Nearly all of my stake horses have been with him. And he's the one person that does let us play with some serious money. So it's just a matter of time, I guess. Hopefully people can take notice.
Adam, who was your first horse and when did you acquire him and how did that come about?
I went out and I saved up my money and I bought a horse called Steamline. This is like a 4-year-old filly. And she only ran one time and she ran second, got beat her nose. And I believe I did gamble on her that day. And she ended up pulling a tendon in that first race and ended up turning her into a broodmare. She had a couple of babies. But I picked up her and a fellow called Pete Donato gave me two horses to train. So I had three horses to get started with, and I had them for like 4 months, and they didn't turn out. You know, ran a couple of seconds and thirds, and then decided to send those horses up to Northern California. So then I was out of business for a good year. So that was heartbreaking to work so hard to build up a little stable of three, and all of a sudden I'm out of business again. I had to go back to working for somebody else. And then I went to the Derby for Jim Caspi on a horse called Ocean Sound, and became friends with the owner, Kelly Michaels. And Kelly kind of just gave me some money and backed me, and we just kind of got on through a good roll from the get-go. And I just slowly started picking up more and more horses.
Well, you certainly had those lowest lows that we hear talked about in the game quite often, the highest highs and the lowest lows. How do you maintain the mental fortitude to get through those times? You know, you mentioned that stretch where you had to go through and take a year off, go back to work for somebody else. How difficult is it to maintain that mental fortitude?
I think anybody that's in this business realizes how tough it is. I mean, I'm not the only person that's had, you know, ups and downs. I think anybody that's in this industry, this is a tough, tough industry. It's a very demanding industry, and you have to have a certain passion for it. Otherwise, you're not going to succeed. And I don't think I'm any different than anyone else. And it's a huge passion for what I do, and that's what kind of gets you through. And you know, you dream about having, you know, the big horse that, you know, will go to the Derby and the big races, and they definitely make the days a little less short.
Well, I'll tell you, if it's any consolation to you, when we had Bill Mott on Trainer Talk, he talked about not being able to get stalls at Centennial Park in Colorado, and then kind of having to go out of business and working for Jack Vanberg and all of those things. So, you know, it happens to everybody, the ups and downs, but tenacity is the thing, and you certainly have that. And the one thing I really like about you is no matter what happens, you always have a great attitude, and you get out there every morning and do your thing regardless. And that's really tough for a lot of people to do.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Adam, just a couple of minutes left here before we have to wrap up our interview on Trainer Talk here tonight, but we always like to end by asking our trainers what they like to do outside of racing when you're not spending all those hours at the track and at the barn. What are some of the other things you enjoy?
Spending time with my wife. She never doesn't get to see me enough, so we like going out to dinners and go do things together, you know, explore new places. I'm actually looking forward to, my wife is pregnant, so looking forward to our first baby. So,
oh, congratulations.
Awesome.
That's kind of exciting right now. And
what's the due date? What's the due date?
November 25th.
Right after Breeders' Cup.
So, yeah, I think just pretty much a quiet person, like hanging out with friends and just nice dinners. That's about it, really.
Lasbura told me whenever you had a kid, your business takes off. So you got that to look forward to as well.
Uh-huh. I hope he's right.
He was right.
Well, Adam, thank you so much for being with us here tonight. Really enjoyable visit, and can't thank you enough for taking the time.
No, thank you very much.
All right, Adam Kitchingman, our special guest here on Trainer Talk. If you did miss any of that interview with Adam or our first half of the show with trainer Linda Rice, you can catch a podcast later on at horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. And boy, fun story there.
Yeah.
Just a different type of story.
Yeah. He's had a really interesting life and, you know, in some aspects, a tough one, in some aspects, a glamorous one, but, you know, his first wife, Vicky, was just a wonderful person. She used to gallop horses for me. She was a great hand and a beautiful girl, and it was just a very, very sad thing to see somebody that was that young in her early 20s die from breast cancer. And
tragic.
I think about her all the time, and I'm sure he does too.
Yeah, I'm sure. All right. Well, again, check out the podcast on our website and on iTunes. Don't forget that you can join us tomorrow afternoon, 3 to 7 Eastern time. Chad Summers will be with Ellis Starr for our live racing coverage from 3 to 6. And then, of course, the call-in show, Bristnet.com call-in show, presented by Twin Spires. On Friday, we're back from 3 to 7 as well. And, of course, our featured event from 6 to 7 Eastern is the Express Bet Weekend Stakes Preview. We take a look at all the big races, including the Stephen Foster, the Fleur de Lis. We are going to be live from Churchill Downs Saturday night with that coverage, 8 to 10 p.m. That's right, 8 to 10 p.m. for that night racing action. Going to be a good one. Can't wait to get to Churchill for that and bring you that coverage here on HRN.
Yeah, night racing. Night racing is fun.
It is fun.
I like night racing.
And by the way, a programming note, that coverage will be aired on Sirius Channel 94 Saturday night. For our producer, Lee Delapina, Jude Feld, I'm Mike Pena. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk on HRN.